All right, welcome everyone to today's Google SEO Search Essential Office Hours Hangout. My name is John Mueller. I'm a search advocate on the search relations team here at Google in Switzerland. And part of what we do are these office hour hangouts where people can join in and ask their questions around search. Looks like we have a bunch of people here today, so that's pretty cool. A bunch of questions were submitted on YouTube already, so we can take a look at some of those. But as always, maybe we can go through a handful of live questions first to get us started. A bunch of people are already raising hands, so it's like super, super quick, everyone. So good. Let's see, Navin.
Okay, thank you, John. So my question is, we have recently added aggregate rating review snippet to our website. And because of the fact that most pages in our website share the same template, the review snippet is now being shown in search results for most of our pages. However, since we added the review snippet, we have seen a decline in terms of click-through rate and rank. Could the addition of review snippet have been a factor? Moreover, we added the rating number and rating value present in a third-party site manually into the website. Could this manual addition have been an issue? We have not received any warning from Google till now, but the search performance is decreasing every day. So what could be the issue, John?
So that wouldn't be related to a drop in rankings. But if you're adding structured data, it should apply to the primary element of the page. And it shouldn't be something that you just copy and paste across the whole site. So that's kind of the one thing there. So if you're using the same structured data on all of the pages of your site, that would be incorrect. The other thing, specifically with regards to reviews, they should be based on reviews that are actually published on your site. They shouldn't be kind of like hand-picked reviews from third-party sites. So that would be essentially against our guidelines, as far as I understand it. So both of those things are not really in line with our guidelines. And it's something where if someone were to manually review that, they might flag that and apply a manual action for that. But it wouldn't affect your site's ranking. It would just affect how we show information for your site in the search results.
OK, thank you, John.
Sure. Let's see, Ibrahim.
Yes, hello. So we have a question about 404 pages. We recently gained a lot of 404 pages because we have online shop. And so sometimes a lot of our products we finish in the stock. So we came to this point. So we have temporary 404 pages and permanently 404 pages. For permanently 404 pages, we know that we can use 410 code. So we tell Google to, yeah, just remove from search result. But for the temporary one, we are not sure what is the best approach. And I would like to get your recommendation on that. We can customize that for sure. And we can also use 410, but we are not sure about that. Or we just let it go.
I think it doesn't matter. So there are different strategies for dealing with temporary products that are out of stock. And essentially, all of those can work for search. So you can just mark it as out of stock. You can use a 404. You can put a no index on the page. It's essentially up to you the way that you want to handle it. And some sites handle it in different ways, and that's perfectly fine. You can also say, if I don't know if it's permanent or not, I'll just mark it out of stock and keep it as a 200 page. And after a month, when I realize I can't get that product anymore, maybe I'll make it a 404. So all of that is essentially up to you.
So the last question I have is, it's not going to somehow affect or impact bad on our rankings or indexing stuff, right?
No, that shouldn't. I mean, especially if you're talking about individual products that come in and out of kind of inventory, then that's those are the kind of fluctuations that always happen on websites. If you say like your whole website is suddenly not available anymore, then that's a bit trickier. But individual products coming and going, that's completely normal.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure.
Merci.
Ratnesh.
Yeah, thank you, John. So today my question is the question is about where keyword placing within the page. So basically, like as we know, like Google is following mobile first indexing. So according to that it will crawl the site. I mean, the Google bot will crawl the site as a smartphone and the desktop, and it will give preference to the whatever the Google crawled as a smartphone. I mean, mobile first indexing. So now I have a page where there is a lot of content, say 20,000 words of content, and my focus keyword is at the bottom of the page. So how it will impact the ranking? Because as I know, like when the user has opened the page on the smartphone, the real user, not the Google bot, so that keyword is not in the active viewport. So unless he scroll down, the focus keyword will not be visible to him because it will be not in active viewport. So how Google see that page, or like how Google crawls as a smartphone, then what is the maximum height of the viewport Google will fetch that page as a smartphone? Yeah.
Yeah, so I would recommend if there's something that you want to tell us that your page is about, to make that as visible as possible. So don't just put that as like a one-word mention on the bottom of your article, but rather like use it in your titles, use it in your headings, use it in your subheadings, use it in captions from images, all of these things to make it as clear as possible for users and for Google when they go to your page that this page is about this topic. So that's kind of the direction I would head there. I would not worry about, like, can Google get to the word number 20,000 or not? Because if you're talking about the word 20,000 and you're saying, this is the most important keyword for my page, then you're already doing things wrong. You really need to make sure that the kind of the information that tells us what this page is about is as obvious as possible, so that when users go there, they're like, yes, I made it to the right page. I will read what this page has to tell me.
Thank you, John.
Sure. Mohammed.
Hi, John. Actually, couple a week or a month ago, I asked you a question related to copied content, and at that time you suggested about DMCA because some websites are copying our content consistently. But at that time we were not aware that some of the keywords they are ranking for higher than us. So at that time you suggested about some factors we have to look into our websites, or at that time, so I do not remember it properly. So can you tell me if someone who is copying my content consistently and ranking better than us, so what could be the factors which we should look into, or what measures we should take into immediately?
I don't know. It's hard to say exactly what we talked about back then. But in general, I think the DMCA process is probably the one that you should be looking into if someone is really copying your content. And the DMCA process is a legal process, so I can't give you advice about that. That's kind of one of the tricky aspects there. But that feels like the direction that I would head there. And with regards to why this can happen, it's really hard to say without looking at examples. But it's for example, really common that someone writes about something else and they include a snippet or a copy of the text, but they provide additional information, and that additional information is valuable enough that we would say, well, this is a page on its own, which we will rank independently of the other one. For example, we often see that with our blog posts, where someone like, I don't know, Barry Schwartz will write about our blog post, maybe quote some of the blog posts. And essentially, he will rank his content almost like better than our content. And from our point of view, it's like they're copying the content, but they're also providing additional insight and maybe questioning some of the things that we wrote about there. And maybe there are people that are commenting on the other side as well. And that provides additional value where we'd have to say, well, it makes sense to show this in the search results additionally. Maybe it even makes sense to show it above the original content. And these are the kind of things where sometimes a copy makes a lot of sense, and it does make sense to show it separately in search results, and sometimes even more visibly in the search results. But if you're really in that situation where you're saying, I don't want people to copy my content, then that's almost a situation where you'd have to take legal steps to prevent that.
We have opted for DMCA. But I want to ask, is Googlebot not able to consider which content is original and which content is copied? Like maybe I have published my content a year back and he's copying right now?
I don't know. From my point of view, it's something we can determine to a large extent. But even if we know which one is the original and which one is a copy, sometimes it makes sense to show a copy in the search results. So that's something where it's like it can happen. And one of the situations where I have seen this happen consistently is if a website is of lower quality overall, where when our systems look at it, they're like, well, we can't really trust this website. But if a higher quality website were to take some of this content and publish it, we would say, well, we know more about this website, and actually, maybe we should show this content in the search results. So that's also one of the situations that you might be running into, where maybe it's worthwhile to also invest in improving the quality of your website overall. So not just that one article that apparently people like, but also the rest of your website overall.
OK, thank you.
Sure. Praveen.
Hi, John. How are you? You are doing great.
Hi.
Hi. So this question came to me from a friend of mine. So they have this website on CCTLD domain, which is .in for India. Now they want to make this website a global website. So, but as you know, CCTLD is like we cannot geo-target with on a CCTLD other countries. So the question was, can we do? Can we with the help of HRF link tags, can we geo-target other countries on a CCTLD domain? Or they need to take a different route, like either go for .com or something else?
So there's a difference between geotargeting and kind of this language regional targeting with hreflang. With geotargeting, if we can tell that a user is looking for something local, then we will use geotargeting to try to promote local sites in the search results. With hreflang, we essentially purely focus on the language and the region, and we swap out the URLs, so it doesn't change ranking. So hreflang tries to bring the correct URL in the search results, but it doesn't change ranking. And geotargeting can change ranking if we think that the user is looking for something local. With a country code top-level domain, you can't use geotargeting for other countries, but you can use hreflang. And if the topic that your content is about is not something where kind of the local requests are made by users in search, then using hreflang is perfectly fine as an approach there.
OK, good. Got it. Like from language perspective, we can go with HRF link tags. But if there is something which is local, then it's good to go with the local version.
Yes, exactly.
OK, so there's a follow-up question, which is more kind of a hypothetical question. For example, there is a global brand which is using a .com for US and CCTLDs for other countries, like .UK for UK and .au for Australia. And as we know, when Google analyzes the website, it looks for like overall quality of the domain, not just a few pages. So in a setup like this, where a website is using different CCTLDs to geotarget, where .co.uk is a website on its own. So in that case, for example, .com is a, from quality perspective, it's a great website from Google's point of view. But .co.uk is not, like, it's below standard. So can that UK website impact performance of .com in a way, because they are interconnected some way through geo-targeting, and you know, Google can figure out that they are both.
Yeah, I mean, usually they would be essentially the same website, just kind of written for the local audience. So from a quality point of view, I think it would be unexpected if a ccTLD website were significantly different than the a generic top-level domain, for example. But essentially what happens is we would rank those pages appropriately for the user and then swap out the URLs. So it's not that we would say this is one giant website across all of these different domains, but rather we would say we will rank the pages that we know about from all of these websites. And then when we have a page that we want to show in the search results, we'll double check the hreflang annotations and swap out the URL for whatever local one there is. So for example, if we would never show the UK version in the search results because it's a really terrible website, and someone in the UK were to search, then probably from geotargeting, we would focus on the UK version of the site, and it would rank lower. And then with hreflang, we would swap out the URLs there. So it's something where there's kind of this subtle mix across across the way that would be handled. But again, it feels like something that's very theoretical, which is unlikely to really happen like that.
Yeah, I've seen such scenarios where different teams are working on, you know, different domains. So like UK team is working on UK site and US team is working on US website, but different with different fundamentals. So
yeah.
That I was asking this question. Yeah, thank you.
Sure. Pramod.
Yeah, hi, John.
Hi.
So my question is related to Core Web Vitals. Basically, I'm assessing my web pages on different Core Web Vital tools like web.dav/measure, Page Speed Insight, Lighthouse, and all of them are giving different values for Web Vitals. So according to you, which tool we should use to improve the Web Vitals for our website? We are basically a bit confused. So
yeah, whichever one works best for you. So there's one thing I think which is really important is we differentiate between what users actually see and what the testing tools say. And for search, we use what users actually see. We call that the field data or the real user metrics. And the testing tools that are out there, they use kind of like their own personal tests, and that is called lab data, we would call that. And all of these lab data testing tools, they try to approximate what a user might see, but they can't know for sure what users will actually see. And sometimes your users will see something different than what our lab tools assume that users will see. So that's, I think, really critical when it comes to Core Web Vitals, to understand that difference between what the testing tools show and what Google would use. What Google would use is in Search Console, in the page experience metrics section there. That's something you would also see in the Chrome User Experience Report, which is a separate site as well. The different testing tools can make different assumptions with regards to what they think users might see, so you would see differences there. My recommendation is to use the real user metrics as a way of recognizing, is there a problem or is there not a problem? And if there is a problem, then to use the different testing tools to try to figure out where this problem might be coming from and what you might need to do to improve that. So it's more like the data in Search Console is used as a directional sign saying everything is good or everything is bad. And then you use the different testing tools to figure out what exactly you can do to improve things. And some tools are easier to use. Some tools have more detailed information. Some tools are faster to run or easier to use. So it's something where you need to find the tools that work well for you. In general, they all go in the same direction, but you would not expect to see exactly the same number in the different measurements for all of these different tools.
Okay.
Sure. Raunauk. Oh my gosh, I'm probably saying your name wrong. Sorry.
That's fine, John. So it's Raunauk. Hi, John.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had a question about disavow list. So back in 2014, actually, we disavowed more than 5,000 links because of a manual action. And recently in March, so 3 months ago, we submitted around 300 links again on the Search Console. And somewhere around that time, we started noticing a significant reduction in SEO traffic and rankings. So like it accounted to about more than 30% loss in traffic in 90 days. So do you think our action in March could have caused an impact on our Google rankings? If so, how would you recommend fixing this issue?
I think it's theoretically possible that it had an effect like that, but I think it would be rare that would happen. So in particular, it could happen if you take all of the most important links to your website and you submit those in a disavow file. Then I could imagine that our systems say, well, there are no really good links for this website anymore, therefore we will have to be a bit more cautious with regards to how we deal with this website. But if you're looking at the links before submitting the disavow file, if you're really going through and only submitting things that are actually problematic, then that would not be a negative factor for your website.
Okay, that makes sense. Thanks, John.
Sure.
John, can I add something on this?
Sure.
So if suppose I have already submitted the list and it is not working well, what will be the effect of reverting back? So will reverting back and forth send some bad signal to Google?
No. It's the disavow file is purely technical for us. It's purely a sign saying, don't take these links into account. And we reprocess that when we reprocess the external pages. So it's basically like just saying, well, use these links or don't use these links. It's not a sign saying, I am a spammer, and here is proof that I was a spammer. It's really just purely saying, I don't want you to use these links for whatever reason. And the reason is totally up to you. It's not something that our systems would judge.
So the number of iterations don't matter.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, thank you, John.
Sure. Nikolai.
Hi, John. Thank you.
Hi.
I represent the Ukrainian News Agency, and our site has a monthly audience of 11.5 million users. It is licensed as a news agency. Ukrainian top officials give us interviews regularly. The content is 70% exclusive. We have about 90-95% page speed insights. Our media outlet always tries to adhere to recommendations regarding search engine optimization. Since January 2021, we have fallen down in search results for the keys related to politics issues, from the top one to the third page of search results, or even deeper. And our stories on politics and economics have ceased to be included in the Google Discover. The rest of the content from our own domain is still in the top and gets into the Google Discover. We have received no letters about sanctions from Google. So we have also noticed that during the same period of time, many low quality sites were stealing content from us. Please tell us, what can we do to change the situation as we keep losing our traffic and money?
Yeah, I don't know offhand. So I think, first of all, I don't have much insight into the Google News side of things. So if you're seeing effects that are kind of tied to the way that Google News processes a website, I don't really have much insight there. That would be something where you'd need to go through the Google News contact in, I believe, the help center for Google News, for Google News publishers. Otherwise, I'm happy to kind of forward your issue along if I can get more information from you with regards to which site it is and what specifically you're seeing. So my recommendation would be, I think you posted also in the YouTube comments. My recommendation would be if you could add a little bit more detail there, then I can pass that on to the team and they can take a look to see if there's something specific on our side that we need to adjust.
Okay, so we can just post it here, yes, in comments?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you so much, John.
Sure. Let me run through some of the submitted questions as well. I realize there's still lots of people with their hands raised, but just to make sure that the submitted things are also taken care of a little bit, I recognize some of the questions here. So there's a little bit overlap here. I also have a bit more time afterwards if any of you want to stick around and still have questions that we need to get through. Let's see, how much influence does direct traffic have in terms of Google taking it as a signal and ranking content from the website? We don't use direct traffic. We don't really have a measure for that anyway. So that's something that we wouldn't use. Can we safely delete the HTTP version of a site in Search Console? The site has been HTTPS for a couple of years now, and all the requests are forced to HTTPS. Yes, you can remove the HTTP version in Search Console. I don't think it would change anything positive or negatively for the website. And if you have the domain verified, which is kind of my recommended approach, then you can always add the HTTP version should you ever need to do something specific with the HTTP version. So for the most part, it doesn't harm to keep the HTTP version in Search Console. But if you want to make room, then of course, feel free to remove it, especially if you don't need it anymore. Our English articles are ranking for featured snippets for some English queries only in some countries. We notice it's only English-speaking countries like US, UK, Australia, and Canada that were not ranking for snippets. Could we be marked as not good English by Google? I don't think so. So featured snippets are essentially a way that we highlight things in the search results with a little bit of a bigger snippet. And they're a part of our normal ranking systems. And we rank slightly differently across the different countries. We use geo-targeting. We try to figure out which results make sense to show to users. And all of that can lead to slightly different results being shown in the search results. So that's something where it's not that our systems would need to go in there and say, oh, this website doesn't have good English, therefore we shouldn't show it in an English-speaking country. But it's more that, well, we have better results that we would show here in other countries, therefore we'll show those instead. Can the URL structure be different than the breadcrumbs on a page? For example, if the URL is just website.com/blog-post-name, but the breadcrumbs show home, main topic, subtopic, blog post name, would that be an issue? That's perfectly fine. So breadcrumbs don't have to match the URL structure. In some cases, you have a very flat URL structure, everything in one file name and no subdirectories. In some cases, you have a very kind of like organized folder-based structure in a URL structure. That's perfectly fine as well. None of these don't have to map to breadcrumbs on a page. I think where some of the confusion comes from is that if you don't use breadcrumb markup on a page, then our systems will try to guess breadcrumbs sometimes. And they try to guess that based on the URL at some point. And then it can happen that our kind of breadcrumb guessing systems will say blog-post-name. That's kind of like a set of breadcrumbs. We should show those. But if you specify breadcrumbs with structured data, then we will use those instead of our kind of guessing metrics. Do Google My Business clicks and impressions show up in Search Console as clicks and impressions? Yes, when the Google My Business listing is shown in the normal search results. So if you do a normal web search and you have a map with your Google My Business listing shown, then we will show that as clicks and impressions in Search Console. However, if you're looking at Google Maps and you see the Google My Business listing, then that's something that would be outside of search, which we wouldn't show. Is there an impact to linking twice to the same page from the menu? No. So there's a little bit more detail in the question. But in short, the answer is no. If you link to the exact same page twice in the menu with different anchor text or something like that, that's perfectly fine. That's not going to cause any problems. If you do that for UX reasons, go for it. It's not going to give you any advantages, like linking twice, but it's totally fine to do. I see a lot of advice online that references data saying short URLs perform better than long URLs. I've also seen quotes from you saying that Google doesn't look at the URLs or the slashes in the URLs, so it's just preference. Do shorter URLs actually make an impact compared to long URLs, or is that just an SEO myth? My guess is this is based on things like correlation studies that are done, where people say, well, when I look at these search results, the top so-and-so results tend to have shorter URLs than the ones way in the bottom. And from that point of view, it's easy to say, well, if you want to rank high, therefore you should have short URLs. But I think that's misleading. It just happens to be that some pages, when they tend to be very, I don't know, concentrated on a website, very important for a specific website, they tend to have shorter URLs because they're closer to the root of the website. And because of that, like, it looks like shorter URLs lead to higher ranking, but it's actually just, well, these are kind of like the primary URLs of a website, and it would be kind of normal for them to rank a little bit more visibly than some random product page that is listed, like, I don't know, 10 steps further down in a website. So from that point of view, shorter URLs are not going to make your website rank better. The one place in our systems where we do use the URL length is when it comes to canonicalization. So in particular, when we know that there are multiple URLs on your website that show exactly the same content, then one of the kind of factors that we take into account there is the length of the URL, where we say, well, if it's a shorter URL, then usually that looks nicer for users, so we tend to use that one. And usually that comes into play when you have things like URL parameters attached to a URL, and you tell us, this version with all of these parameters is the same as the same version without parameters, then our systems will say, well, the one without parameters looks nicer. We'll just use that one instead. And canonicalization is not something that just uses one factor. We use a lot of different factors there. So it's not always going to be the short one that we pick as a canonical, but it tends to go in that direction. And when it comes to canonicalization, it doesn't change rankings. It's purely which URL is shown in the search results. The news agency, I think we looked at aggregate rating we looked at, outdated news pages, what's the best practice to apply to old news pages. By that, I mean news of last year. Would deleting these be the best option, or no indexing, or what should be the best way from an SEO point of view? Generally, I recommend keeping the old content online, maybe putting it into an archive section if you want. If you really don't want to keep it anymore, then deleting it, no indexing it, all of that is perfectly fine. But for the most part, I don't see a need to kind of remove old content on a website. So from that point of view, it's not that I would say you should always delete old news. Sometimes it's useful to find. Why would Google exclude a large amount of URLs that were already indexed? We have about 1,800 URLs excluded, and now within the past month, we have over 10,000 excluded. We haven't changed anything. So I think this is kind of tricky because we don't have any guarantees that we will index everything from a website. So it's completely normal that sometimes we have more indexed and sometimes we have less indexed. When I look at some of my older test sites where I have a ton of pages kind of just for test purposes in Search Console to see how things kind of perform with the technical reports there, it's completely normal for me to see like things fluctuating quite a bit. And sometimes they fluctuate very strongly. And I haven't changed anything on these sites for years, but still, the number of index pages goes up like crazy amounts. The amount of crawling goes up and down all the time, and that's completely normal. So that's something where, from my point of view, the amount that we index from a website, that varies over time. And that isn't something where we would say we will try to index everything from all websites, because it's just purely from a technical point of view, it's impossible to get everything from all websites.
Can I add to that?
Sure.
Quick, is my question.
Oh, great.
So we have product schema right now, but we don't have it filled out. So we're getting errored for that. Would that be the reason why we are getting de-indexed?
No. The structured data is purely for understanding what else is on the page and for showing that in the rich results. So it wouldn't be a sign that we would say we will drop these pages from the index.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Usually the best approach that I've seen to getting more content indexed in a consistent way is to make sure that the quality of the website overall is as high as possible. So that's kind of a trick from, I don't know if you could call it a trick, but essentially you're telling Google that this is really important content, and then Google will try to actually go off and make sure that all of that is indexed. So that's something that kind of comes into play with the crawl budget discussions, and we have a blog post, I think, a couple of years back now with regards to crawl budget, and that also includes the topic of crawl demand, which is basically how much Google wants to crawl from a website. And crawling is kind of the first step to indexing. So understanding a little bit like how you can make sure that the quality of your website overall is as high as possible so that our systems, when they see pages from your website, that they say, well, it's really important that we crawl and index this as quickly as possible. And it's kind of tricky because it's not that much of a technical factor where you can say, well, I will like add a meta tag and say Google should index this page.
OK, so deleting all of that schema wouldn't help.
Exactly, yeah.
OK. And if we have a lot of, so it's an e-commerce website, and we have a lot of industrial products that are very similar, could that play a factor as well that Google are saying these pages are very similar? Just the difference is a part number.
Sometimes. Usually, if that comes into play, it would be something that we would show probably also in the coverage report, where we would say a different URL was chosen as canonical. So it's not so much that we wouldn't index those pages, but rather we would see those pages and say, oh, this is very similar to the other page that I already know about. I will pick that one as a canonical.
OK. Thank you.
Sure. What could be the best average period to measure the impact of our website changes? For example, if I disintegrate the AMP feature from a news website, note a traffic drop in the next hour. Could that be due to removing AMP? I think this is kind of tricky because on the one hand, it sounds like, what if I make normal changes on my website? How long does that take? Where that's something where I'd say, well, it depends. And it's something where you tend to see changes within a couple of days, and then the majority of the changes maybe within the next month, and then some remaining changes over, I don't know, half a year or longer even. But specifically about kind of AMP and non-AMP, one of the things specifically with AMP on news pages is that this is tends to be very quick in reaction. So it's not something where it's a normal technical change, where if you change all of the titles on your page to something different, where it takes a while to be reprocessed. With AMP, it's something that we try to pick up as quickly as possible. And if, for example, the URLs are no longer in the AMP cache, then we would have to kind of react fairly quickly and swap all of that out. In practice, I would expect just removing AMP or disabling AMP is something where you would tend to see within, I don't know, a couple of days, you tend to see those changes fairly quickly. And you would specifically see that the AMP pages are no longer being shown in search, but rather we show the normal pages again. And it's not so much that you would see a ranking drop during that time, but rather a swap in the URLs that are shown. And depending on how you're tracking things, that could look like a ranking drop. So that's kind of the effect there. I don't think you would see an effect within an hour when removing an app. It feels like something where it's more like it's a fast change, but it's something that would come within a couple of days. The one effect with regards to AMP that might be visible with regards to kind of ranking is that the top stories carousel, where by default the AMP pages would be eligible to be shown there, but non-AMP pages kind of previously were not eligible to be shown there. And I think since this week, since we started rolling out the page experience update, non-AMP pages are also eligible to be shown there, provided they're, I think, fast enough or good enough with regards to the page experience ranking factors. So it's like a lot of these small details kind of come into this question. I would not expect an effect within 1 hour, but you could probably see some effects when you remove AMP, specifically for a news website, over the course of, I don't know, a couple of days until things settle down a little bit again. Also, usually with a news website, the website tends to rank more for the new content. So it's something where, for the most part, big changes that you make will be reflected in the new pages that you have. It's a little bit different with a traditional website where traffic might be going to all parts of the website, where if you make a change, all of those parts have to be updated over time. I have one website with yourbrand.de in German with language DEDE, and one with .com in English with ENGB or US. One is basically a clone of the other, but properly translated. Are there any disadvantages not using rel alternate hreflang? Are there any advantages to applying it? So essentially, the hreflang links between those two pages will not change the rankings of those pages. So that's kind of the first step. However, they can swap out the URLs that are being shown. So it's hard to say whether there's an advantage or disadvantage from using it. I think there's definitely no disadvantage to using it. But essentially, the advantage is kind of if we're showing the wrong language URL in the search results, then with hreflang, we can swap that out. So usually, you would see this if someone has a brand that is the same across multiple languages. If users are just searching for that brand name, then from the query alone, we don't know which language content to show, which language content to rank for that page. And it can happen that we would rank the wrong version for that. So I don't know. For example, if you search for Google in Germany, we would not necessarily know that someone is looking for the German version of Google. So it could happen that the .com version is shown to users. And then with hreflang, we would swap out the URL against the German version because we know, oh, this user is in Germany and has their settings set to German. So we should use the German version for their page. So it's not so much that it will rank better, but rather that the corrector version will rank. On the other hand, if users are always searching in a way that is clearly localized, where if you have, say, different brands across different countries, and someone in one country searches for your brand, and there's only that one page which is really relevant for that result, then probably hreflang will not change anything. So that's something where it's like, I would double check first, are users seeing the wrong versions? And if so, then use hreflang. If not, then probably don't need to use that.
John, regarding this hreflang, can I just have a follow-up?
Sure.
OK, so this is always very confusing for us, especially for branded queries. So John, for instance, if I have English page and I have folder for German or DE folder for Germany, in Germany, if a person is searching, obviously brand name would remain in English, or person can just type the brand name, but his browser language is in German. So in that case, using hreflang means Google will show German version on branded query, right? And if his browser language setting is in English, then English page will appear. because query is the same. Query is the same.
Yeah.
Does it mean that Google will just try to see only browser language setting and just accordingly then serve the right page?
It's not quite that simple. Yeah.
So, yeah, this is why I just said it is always confusing to us.
Yeah, I mean, because there are some situations where, so on the one hand, if you're signed in, you can specify which language you would like to have for Google. So it might be that your browser is set to English, but the language that you prefer is German or French. And we would use that in a case like that. The other thing is that, especially when we're talking about English, a lot of times the default language on a computer is English, and these computers are distributed worldwide. And if we can recognize that this is essentially a default setting, then we might say, well, we can't trust the setting to be accurate, so we will use whatever is locally relevant. So this is particularly, I think, an issue in English, where if we see that a browser is set to US English and everything looks default, then we might say, well, probably the user is in Germany, so probably they want German content, even though their browser is set to English, because we assume that maybe they didn't set the browser language at all, and it's just the default setting. They don't know how to change that. Mm-hmm. So purely based on the browser language is usually not enough.
So John, I just wanted to understand only for branded queries, because brand remains the same. And technically it happens that if we are expanding to different language, then the management, the company, and even the SEO want for branded query in the same language, the person should land to respective language page rather than home page or English page.
Yeah. I think in general, with regards to internationalization, you should not rely on Google always getting this right, and instead have some kind of a fallback mechanism on your pages where you're saying, you landed on the German version of our homepage, but it looks like you have your browser set to French, so here's also the French version, and make it easy for people to get to the appropriate version of your site. So always have that backup set up there. And it particularly makes sense when you're across different countries, where people might also just enter the URL and say, well, I entered the .com because that's the main site, but I'm located in India, so I should be getting the Indian version of the site. And having a banner on top saying, like, hey, do you want to go to the Indian version of our site? Click here. That makes it easy for people to get there. And at the same time, with the banner, you're making it so that when Google crawls that page, that Googlebot doesn't automatically get redirected to any particular version.
Mm-hmm. Very good suggestion. John, I think you have already shared this suggestion. So yeah, cool. We have been using this.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure. Let me just grab one more question from the list, really short one. What's the best practice for rel canonical on a URL that is now returning 404? You can do whatever you want on a 404 page. If the result code is 404 or 410 or any error, then we will ignore all content on the page. What you put in the robots meta tags and the rel canonical is totally irrelevant for us because we already recognize that there's nothing there that we need to index. So that was kind of an easy one. And so let me get back to all of these millions of people who have raised hands. And we'll get, I don't know, one or two more in, and then pause the recording, and then kind of continue on afterwards as well. Julian.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Hi.
So my question is about best practices for a website that's a database of products that monetizes via affiliate links. So the site is UGC and community-driven, and readers can contribute unique content, reviews, and other cool stuff. So, you know, just up front, I know how skeptical Google is of thin affiliate sites that offer no unique value. And I know you've talked about it a lot on here, and I totally get that. So on this particular site, let's say you've got 100,000 products or so, and 20%, let's say, have accrued a lot of great unique content, and they're helpful. And after that, it's kind of a sliding scale where there's some that are medium that are getting to be useful, right? And then on the other end, you have some that would probably be considered pretty thin. So my goal is not to have Google judge the overall picture of the website as, hey, this is a thin affiliate. So I feel like tactically I have a chicken and egg problem, because you need starter pages created in the first place that may be viewed as thin, I think, from a Google lens. But you kind of need them so they can accrue unique content over time. Some products just aren't going to be as popular, et cetera, right? So my inclination is just make use of Noindex, which sounds, you know, kind of like the simplest answer for pages that haven't hit a certain quality threshold. And I know you've gone on record to say that Google tries to look at pages granularly. So if there's 1,000 pages, one is great, 999 are crap. Like, it behooves Google to show that one great page. But you judge trust based on larger sections of the site. So, you know, you could look at all product pages, how trustworthy is the site? So I guess my two kind of pointed questions are, is it enough to Noindex the ones that haven't hit the quality threshold? Or should I go as far as to remove affiliate links from the not so great pages? So broadly, how do I get in Google's good graces for this type of a website, which I know is kind of a hot button issue a little bit?
Yeah. So Noindex would be perfectly fine. I don't think you would see any effect if you just removed the affiliate link there and left those pages, because we would just judge the pages on their own and say, like, well, there's not much content here. And the kind of the matter of the affiliate link is almost like a side note there.
Okay.
So I think the approach with Noindex makes a lot of sense. Figuring out how to recognize what pages are quality or not, that's sometimes a bit tricky, but it sounds like you have some ideas. So that's kind of the direction I would head there, to really say, like, I mean, one of the kind of mixed approaches you could also take is to say, well, if we have new products, then we will let those be indexed for a while and see if after a period of a month or so they kind of reach that quality threshold, then fine. And otherwise, we'll take them out again to kind of make it possible for new things to also be visible from time to time.
Okay.
But generally, especially for all of the content that you collect over the years, if you're saying, well, someone submitted this 5 years ago, nobody has commented on it since then, maybe we should just Noindex this. And you could also go so far as to say at some point, well, like, I've Noindexed it for a year, and nobody has manually gone there either, so maybe we don't need it at all. But that's something where Google wouldn't really care what you would do after you've Noindexed it. So Noindex really tells us, don't take this to account in our index, and we won't take it into account with our quality systems either.
OK, that makes sense. Thank you.
Sure. Let's see, Nathan.
Hi, John. I was wondering about the site Vitality and Search Console. As we have a website that just doesn't get a lot of traffic, so there's no data there. Would that mean that the core web vitals couldn't even be, you know, taken into approach as to, you know, taken into effect for SEO purposes?
If we don't have data for a site at the moment, we wouldn't be able to use that for the ranking factor. But we have a lot of practice with dealing with sites where we don't have the full data set. So it's something where I wouldn't necessarily worry about it. And I wouldn't see it as something like, oh, I have to build more traffic to my website in order for it to be able to rank. But rather, if your website just doesn't have a lot of traffic, then that's perfectly fine. A lot of websites don't have a lot of traffic.
I know. Yeah. All right. OK, thanks.
All right, let me pause the recording here. And like I mentioned, you all are welcome to hang around a little bit longer afterwards as well. It looks like there's still tons of questions left. So we'll see how far we can make it before I fall over. Thank you all for watching this recording, if you're watching it on YouTube. And feel free to jump on in one of the future episodes if you'd like to join us live. All right, let's pause here.